हरिः
then it's recommended you cover your head. Even though you don't feel the heat go out of your head, more heat goes out of your head than any part of your body. You'll feel the cold, though, in your back. Right? So, the general rule is, if your feet feel cold, cover your head. Okay? So those who are coughing and wheezing and sneezing and, you know, all these things, then start wearing the hat piece. Yes? No? If you don't feel good, this feels like middle of summer, because cold to you means 10 feet of snow, then don't worry about it. As the day turned to twilight, temple bells rang throughout the town. Abai walked to the western side of the roof and looked into the city of thousands of temples. The Govindaji temple, the Ranganath temple, and thousands of smaller temples were having their Sandhya Arti and Kirtan glorifying Lord Krishna. No, I think we read this. Okay. It was light when he went out, his bead bag around his neck, a few copies of Back to Godhead in his hand. Turning right at the temple door, he walked the tight, crooked lane past alleys, dirt paths, and crossed lanes, which interlaced in a winding network. There were no shops in the area, only silent buildings, many of them hundreds of years old. The neighborhood was serene. Behind closed shutters, someone played on wooden clackers and sang Hare Krishna softly. At a crossroads where dark women filled brass water pots from a well, Abai turned left onto a street lined with small open porches. On either side, he saw ornate temple architecture, one entrance marked by two stone lions, another by a carved elephant with teeth like a tiger's. Those are actually tigers with a nose like an elephant. Like that. They're called yalis. They're kind of, you don't have them in the Kali Yuga, but they are very large lions. And they have, so their body is like a lion, head's like a lion, but they have a nose like a like an elephant. You may have seen them in South Indian temples. Generally they're on columns and they sit like this. They have their nose, and in the end of their nose they have a little elephant. So that's how big they are. So they only eat elephants. Like that. But in Kali Yuga they don't have them, which is probably good. Like that. They're pretty big. A brick and mortar wall was crumbling with age. Soon Abai arrived at the Radharaman temple, established almost 500 years before by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, one of Lord Chaitanya's chief followers. Here, residents of Vrindavan were coming and going according to their vows, following a strict schedule that allowed not a moment's delay. making their daily visit to various temples, right? Because some devotees, then they have a vow they'll visit all seven temples. So there's only a certain amount of time that they're all open or that you can do that. They have a schedule. So if you go very quickly, you come in, offer your obeisances, prayer, and then immediately go to the next temple, then you can catch all seven temples immediately one after another and get darshan of all of them. Otherwise, if you stay too long, the others will close. Abhay entered and stood amidst a group of worshippers, viewing the deity of Krishna, Radha Raman. The deity, wearing a fresh garland of flowers, his enchanting black form adorned with bright silks and jewels, appeared very opulent. Knowing the priests of Radha Raman to be respected, learned Sanskritists, some of whom also read English, Abhay had brought with him a few copies of Back to Godhead. He met Vishwambar Goswami, a young priest in his 30s, who after the death of his father had left his law practice and taken over some of the temple management. Like that. I think now he's passed on, and his son, right? What's his son's name? You don't remember. But I think his son now is managing the temple, or is one of the main pujaris. Like that. But before is that like 70s, 80s, and it was Vishwambar Goswami, even into the 90s. Now it's the son. The temple was run under a caste Goswami system. And thus for 500 years, Vishwambar's ancestors had handed down charge of the temple. Although Vishwambar had met many sadhus, he was immediately struck by Abhay's gentle and humble demeanor. He accepted the copies of Back to Godhead and sat and talked with Abhay. He was always favorable to Islam as Vishwambar. You know, devotees would come, you know, to his house, he could discuss. Before it was Shaligrams, he would identify, you know, what was the name of the different Shaligrams and that. Abhay then continued along Vrindavan's winding lanes to visit another temple, Radha Damodar. He passed old Babaji's and women carrying water, a commercial shop beside an open arch where people worshipped the Shiva Linga, monkeys sitting atop a high concrete wall, and ranging from roof to roof, ledge to ledge, chattering and gesturing as Abhay walked beneath. As the morning progressed, barefoot children had begun to appear more frequently, playing within the open doorways. As he walked along chanting japa, his right hand in his bead bag, his lips moved softly. Hardly anyone in Vrindavan knew him. But as an elderly, cultured Bengali gentleman, he did not seem an unusual sight. He was a religious babu in a town devoted entirely to religion. So at this time, nobody knew, but with time, he would become very prominent. Abhay would regularly visit Vrindavan's important temples, and afterwards he would shop, returning to his room around 11 with vegetables for cooking. Using the kerosene burner and a three-tiered cooker, he would cook rice, potatoes, and sometimes sabji. He would also cook chapatis. He would take only one meal a day at noon, and in the evening a cup of milk. When he did not have time to cook, he would take the prasadam of the deity. So this cooker, it was an interesting cooker, three-tiered, is that it looks like a tiffin, but inside the tiffin is another tiffin. Each level, each tiffin, you know, fits into the other, but except for the bottom one, of course. The others have holes in the bottom so that the steam can go through, and then inside that they have another tiffin sitting. So in the bottom level, you put water and you put the dal. Then the next level, you put the rice in the pot. And then above that, then you put the vegetables. And then the top was curved like that. You know, brass, but it was curved. And they put that whole thing on the fire. And so as the dal boils, it steams the rice, and the vegetables get steamed. Then when it's finished, you open it up, that little round top, you take that, put that on the fire, you make the chants for the dal and for the vegetables. and then hari bol, you know, it's done. And then separately, then you cook your chapatis. Like that. So it's a very clever system. So Prabhupada had designed it himself like that. So he'd always travel with it like that. After lunch, he would nap for 15 minutes and then write. He rarely received visitors, but stayed alone writing. Just before sunset, he would again go out visiting temples. At Keshigat, he would pass by sadhus, sitting alone here and there, facing the Yamuna. The river itself was little trafficked. Sometimes a boat or two slowly moved on the river's placidity. What's the river's placidity? No idea. Placidity means what?
Flow.
Flow, but it's more in line with placid means like peaceful. Oh, that's why no one would know the word placidity. No one knows what peaceful is. Peaceful, you know, quiet, calm, you know, not rioting, not pinching, poking, yelling, screaming, running around. That means placid, you know, peaceful. It doesn't mean ignorance, it doesn't mean asleep. It means you're actually fully awake, fully conscious, and not crazy. Right? Like that. A very unique concept, I'm sure, right? Like that. Wow, where'd that come from? Okay. Thought he just had on the cotton shutter, and suddenly now this hood comes out. Very good. Okay, so the river is very, very calm. You know, very smooth, no waves, no nothing like this and that. So, you know, then now and again you'll see a boat just very quietly, you know, go along like that. Sometimes a fish splashed in the water, or a bird winged along the river, watchful. Keshigat was quiet and beautiful, especially after the sun had relented for the day. Sadhus would hail Abhay on sight with Vrindavan's common greeting, Jai Radhe, and Abhay would return his Hare Krishna. When in the evening he walked through town, he would find himself amidst the vibrations of one kirtan after another. In the temples of Krishna, Rama, Chaitanya, Nrsimha, or Shiva, in ashram halls, in homes, even amongst groups walking on the street, there would be kirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He would often see Bengali widows gathered together in a hall. Thousands of them lived in ashrams in Vrindavan, staying together with few wants, wearing dull white saris, keeping their hair cut short, never leaving Vrindavan, even for Mathura, wanting only to stay in Vrindavan, to die in Vrindavan, chanting Hare Krishna. A man would sit playing mridanga and leading a chant while a group of widows clapped their hands unevenly, responding in their childlike voices. The drum, the clapping, the singers, unpolished but earnest, made a sweet sound in the evening. What does that mean, unpolished but earnest? Yes. Yes, you know, in other words, very sincere, but not necessarily something that you would make a tape out of, you know, and try to, like that. That makes sense? So the important thing is that sincerity, that attempt. That's what makes something nice, right? And if you're sincere, then it's good. What is this bottle?
Coffee.
Keep your own, huh? As Abhay walked, no sooner would the sound of one kirtan fade than another would rise loudly before him and then fade behind him as another rose to meet him. A temple bell rang formidably, intermingling with the drums, cymbals, and chorus of another group or a single person passing nearby singing his own Radhe Radhe. What is formidably? No idea. Formidable, you know, very... you know, very strong presence, very powerful. It's, you know, something not easy necessarily to deal with, you know, like in, how you say, you know, playing marbles, then you're up against a very formidable opponent. Means he's very expert and not easy to beat, you know, like, you know, Radha Raman or something. Even though you're very big, he's small, but he's still very formidable when it comes to that. Yes? No? I understand. Formidable. Even the greetings were kirtan, jai radhe, hari bol. As faces passed, as carts clattered by, as men joked or made their last transaction of the day in the market, and as stray cows made their way home, their bells clanging around their necks, somehow everything was in connection with Krishna. And as Abhay returned to the secluded Vamsi Gopalji temple, there also he would hear kirtans, only more private. Perhaps only a husband and wife in their room, the man playing mridanga and singing one line of a bhajan, his wife singing in response. Vrindavan was not ordinary. Every singer sounded sweet, in his own way an expert melodist, and everyone sang of Krishna. Krishna was present in every occasion and event. What's a melodist? Someone who's always very mellow and professes mellowism. Yes? Yeah, beautiful. It means good. You were going to say? Proper melody, or just means that they are having some ability within it to sing different tunes and sing them very nicely. You know, keeping to the right notes and all that. That's the, so they are, you know, have some you know ability in that in the variety of melodies. So therefore, a melodist. Srila Prabhupada. The glories of Krishna nobody can understand. Similarly, Vrindavan. The land which is known as Vrindavan also has unlimited potency. When you go to Vrindavan, you will find unlimited potency of spiritual atmosphere. Still, if you go to Vrindavan, you will see so many saints and sages. Still, they are worshipping Vrindavan Dham. As Lord Krishna is worshipable, similarly, his place, Vrindavan, is as good as Krishna. It is also worshipable. Right? So the Dham is special because it's where Krishna lives. So everything about it is for Krishna. So then one can always see like that. Right? So if that is appreciated, then you get so much benefit. You don't appreciate it, then you'll get less benefit. But once, in other words, living in the Dham, it can't be just only that it's, okay, it's your place, it's where you live. It also should be that you remember that this is the Dham, so there's something beneficial there you're trying to develop, you're trying to cultivate. Yes? Commuting became difficult. He would take the morning train into Delhi, and having nowhere to stay, return to Vrindavan the same night. What's commuting? Yeah, basically.
Moving.
Communicate. Means you're moving. He's moving from Vrindavan down to Delhi and back. So communicate here means that it's difficult. The communicating is difficult means it's difficult to travel, difficult to make the arrangements and all that. He would take... That didn't give him much time in Delhi, and it was expensive. At first, he had stayed with Mr. Gupta, a pious gentleman who studied the Gita regularly, and afforded sadhus a place to stay. Abhay had explained to Mr. Gupta about his back to Godhead and his desires to preach in the West. It had been a good arrangement, and Abhay had kept to himself writing. But in time, another sadhu took the room. Even with his minimal personal expenses, it was difficult to raise. I think this Mr. Gupta. I'm not sure that it's not, I'd heard about him. That Prabhupada would go there and then his, how do you say, you know, he would ask if, Mr. Guru would ask Prabhupada if he's visiting, you know, just like that. You know, if there was something he would like, you know, to eat or something like that. No, I'm okay, like that. And then he would call, then he would ask Mrs. Gupta, you know, his wife was here, she could come, you know, she knows something. Then she would come into the room, he'd say, do you know how to cook this particular preparation? He would go through it in detail, you know, the recipe, you know, find what spicing, what to put here, there, how it would, everything about it. She'd say, yes, yes, and says, oh, okay, nice, very good, very good, very good. Then, you know, she'd go. And then after a while, he would call her again and explain another recipe and like that, and then another recipe. By the time he had finished the recipes, then he actually had a complete meal, right, you know. And then after that, she would catch it, and then she would go and cook. So, because they were, you know, does that make sense? So a very subtle way of dealing. So they thought it was very fun. You know? Mr. Gupta and his wife thought it was fun. Even with minimal personal expenses, it was difficult to raise enough in donations to cover traveling, printing, and mailing. Giving copies of Back to Godhead away wasn't difficult, and he was doing that in Vrindavan. But working alone, writing, editing, selling, soliciting donations was too much. The printer, Mr. Jain, was amazed, wondering why a person would put himself through such difficulties. Printing a newspaper he couldn't afford. Srila Prabhupada, I worked for Back to Godhead day and night. In the beginning, when I was a householder, I did not care if someone paid or not paid. I used to distribute liberally. But when I left my household life and was living alone, sometimes in Vrindavan and sometimes in Delhi, or sometimes traveling for pushing on BTG, they were very hard days. After his 12th consecutive fortnight edition, what's fortnightly? Every 2 weeks. Yeah, monthly will be every month. Fortnightly will be every 2 weeks. Weekly will be every week. Daily is every day. Bi-monthly, every 2 months. Right? Then I think you have quarterly, which will mean every 3 months. Then I'm not sure. Then you have yearly. It's a year. Do you have one for 6 months? Never heard. Oh, well. Like this. Then they have. So this is fortnightly, every 2 weeks. Right now the BTG is every 2 months. It was every month, but now they do it every 2 months. They make it thicker. It's thicker. It's probably 1.5 times the size. Now it's every 2 months. But there here was a 4-page. It was like, you know, 1 page folded in half. So you had 4 pages. So that was the size. So he'd print that every 2 weeks. But he'd have to write all the articles, then print it, get it, you know, I mean edit it, get it printed by checking everything, and then after that, then distribute it. That would make the money then to make the next one. And so he'd do that every 2 weeks. Serious, right? After his 12th consecutive fortnightly edition, the issue for November 20th, 1956, Abai ran out of money. Mr. Jain had to throw up his hands, saying he couldn't print simply out of friendship. Abai returned to Vrindavan, where he spent his time writing, but with no plan for publication. It was because people weren't interested in becoming Krishna conscious, because they had no time, that Back to Godhead had failed financially. Certain sadhus in India were celebrated and influential, but Abai was not amongst them. Of course, the uncompromising preaching he had learnt from his spiritual master, the chopping technique, in which he openly criticized revered politicians and holy men, was not likely to win him favor and patronage. Don't flatter, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had said. Speak the truth, and if Krishna is pleased, then you will come out successful. Money will come. And Abai had firm faith in this. Right? So the chopping technique is not very popular. But that's one of the explanations of the sannyas dandas, the top, that curved piece of bamboo, the prash. Then one explanation, I mean, the standard is that's Paramatma. The other is it's a battle axe. You know, that means it's the, like you have the, right, there's the, I think they're on long poles. Isn't it, they're called halberds or something like that. They're a long pole. that has a, you know, a pointy end like a javelin, but just down from the top, then they have an actually curved blade. You know, the inside is where the it's at. So that's specifically meant for cutting off heads, right? So it's also then said like that. So it signifies the chopping technique of preaching. It means you just go in and not, so, you know, in a very pleasant way, you just tell them the actual truth like that, instead of just trying to be pleasant and nice and win their favor, but never actually being strong and establishing what actually is Krishna consciousness. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his mood was, you just preach, you just tell the truth, and that, and if people are sincere, they'll come, and if they're not, they won't. So you don't bother about, you know, trying to be, how do you say, when you're preaching, to be, so careful about, it's not a matter of so careful, it's a matter of finding a way to very directly tell the truth, like that. So you may adjust according to the different audiences, how you're saying it, this and that, but it still doesn't mean that you don't tell the truth, right? Does that make sense? So adjusting or for the audience doesn't mean you're not explaining the truth. It just means that maybe you're not as, you know, blunt about it, maybe a little more pleasant about it. Right? Does that make sense? That was his outstanding asset, his faith in his spiritual master. He was sure that by following Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he would receive his blessings and the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. Although for the last 2 years he had followed any path that had opened as far as it had led, he had remained one-pointed, aimed at serving the order of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was confident, sooner or later he would obtain substantial backing. He would find a sympathetic audience. Sincere workers would join him, right? So he had that faith. So this is in the 50s. He had been doing this since he started his magazine in the 40s. But it wasn't until the 60s that all this would happen. So when this is happening here, it's 10 years later that all these things would come. All the backing, all those helping and assisting and everything. So that's very important. If one is following the order of the spiritual master and one doesn't seem to be getting success, so the system is not, there's something wrong with the order of the spiritual master. No, we haven't been applying it well enough, or we just, you know, apply it until Krishna is very happy with that, then it will work. But we don't say, this is not correct, there's something wrong with it, it won't work. Oh, maybe it worked, you know, Prabhupada was giving, maybe it worked in the 60s, it can't work now, it's a different time, right? You know, birds don't fly anymore, dogs don't bark, you know, it's different, right? So, you understand? You know, always has to have that faith in this order of the spiritual master. Then applying that, one finds different ways. So we see Prabhupada would try any opportunity, he would take advantage. Right, the opportunity came up in Jhansi, he was, you know, working there, then in Delhi, he was working with that, now Vrindavan. So whatever would work, wherever he found some possibility, he would be involved. But even though the opportunities were different, his purpose was the same, to please his spiritual master. So then it worked very nicely. A letter came to Abai in Vrindavan from his disciple Acharya Prabhakar Misra. And it gave Abhai an idea. Acharya Prabhakar, who was in Bombay working as secretary of the Sanskrit department at the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan. Oh, that's right down at the end of where the Chopati temple is. Just at the end of the street, right on the corner. That's the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan. They invited Bhaktivedanta Prabhu to join him there for preaching together, just as in the old days. The founder director of the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan was Governor K.M. Munshi, the same governor whose wife had pressured Abai to give up the Radha Memorial in Jhansi. Oh, very nice. But Acharya Prabhakar, having recently established a friendship with the governor, intimated to Abai that the governor might be willing to help. Thus, in January 1957, After assuring Mahant Gopal that he would return and that he would send 5 rupees a month for his room, Abhay traveled to Bombay. Acharya Prabhakar got Abhay quarters in the faculty residence and introduced him to various scholars and religionists. They then attended a lecture by Governor Munshi. The lecture was called, What is Wrong with the World? Right? The 4 W's, what is wrong with the world? Okay. Afterwards, Abhay approached the governor, expressing his appreciation of the speech, but stressing that it would take a spiritual movement to avert the immense global disasters. Without God consciousness, even Mr. Munshi's work in the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan would be a waste of time. Abhay spoke of his interest in reviving the League of Devotees, and he suggested how he might work within the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan to infuse the life of God consciousness into the governor's cultural projects. Governor Munshi responded by offering Abhay a post as honorary professor of Bhagavad Gita. Abhay accepted and gave the governor some copies of Back to Godhead, requesting that he read them in his spare time. As honorary professor of Bhagavad Gita, Abhay began each class with Hare Krishna Kirtan and then lectured on the Gita, presenting Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But he soon found his post confining. What's confining?
Holding him back,
yeah, restricting and everything like that. You know, it's like confining, you know, you have to be in class, sit there, pay attention, do your work, you know, instead of being out running around, yelling, screaming, pinching, poking, you know, like that. So that's confining. Yeah? That makes sense? Within the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, he found little scope for reviving the League of Devotees. Then, along with other members of the Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, Abhay attended the 5th annual convention of the World Academy of Sanskrit at Kurukshetra. For 5,000 years before, Lord Krishna had spoken Bhagavad Gita. India's president, Dr. Rajendra Prasad, Governor Munshi, and many scholars and pundits from all over India participated in the discourses. But everyone there had his own thing to say, apart from the conclusions of Lord Krishna. So Abhay considered the meeting a waste of time. Since he was not scheduled to speak, since the non-devotional discussions on Gita disturbed him, and since he saw that nothing practical would come of such a theoretical meeting, he left Kurukshetra and returned to Vrindavan. Acharya Prabhakar soon joined Abhay. As they talked together in Abhay's room at the Vamsi Gopalji temple, Abhay spoke again of his desire to revive the League of Devotees. After having recently seen the watered-down cultural programs at Bombay and Kurukshetra, he felt even more keenly the need for a society of pure devotees, where already so many cultural and religious organizations. If he liked, he could join one. Oh no, there were already so many cultural religious organizations. If he liked, he could join one. But where was that organization with which he could affiliate himself wholeheartedly? Only the League of Devotees espoused the conclusions of Lord Chaitanya and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, vigorous worldwide preaching of devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so many organizations are all there, different cultural things, different religious, you know, all nice, everyone gets together. But the conclusion is not pure devotional service. They're not trying to please Krishna. They're not trying to go back to Godhead. So therefore, it all basically is a waste of time. So that's the difficulty. All your smoke's going out. I mean, I'm sure there's no... What do you say? Mosquitoes out there. So, I mean, that also will work. You get them out of there, then they won't come in here. So that's the thing, is he's the only one that was, how do you say, establishing a movement of pure devotees who are interested in pure devotional service. That's their goal, that's their purpose. So all these others, they just were not interested in that level. They just were doing their daily life, add a little bit of something cultural, a little religious to it, so you feel good about yourself, you did something, you're part of a group there, and you're doing a little, on the weekend you do something, this, that. So that kind of stuff was all they were interested in. Abai drafted an appeal to the generous public, modern philosophers, leaders, and religionists on behalf of the League of Devotees. The activities of the League, he stated, would be to publish Back to Godhead in English with translations in many other languages, to educate young men and women for worldwide preaching, and to operate a press solely for printing transcendental literature. These programs would require an estimated 3,000 rupees per month, and he appealed for help. Abai concluded, Vrindavan is the sacred place of topmost importance, and the headquarter of his league is therefore situated here. Using the impressive new titles, Honorary Professor of Gita, Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, and Honorary Secretary of Hari Bhavan, Abai, with the assistance of Acharya Prabhakar, launched another attempt at rallying support for Back to Godhead and the League of Devotees. Within a few days, Acharya Prabhakar returned to his post in Bombay, and Abai was again alone in Vrindavan. He loved Vrindavan, yet with no means to publish and preach, he was not content there. If he were to travel, he might be able to enlist members for the League. He thought of Kanpur, which was nearby, a city of more than 100 big factories, and many wealthy industrialists, some of whom he had met during his business travels. He decided to go. After printing some League of Devotee membership forms, he explained to Mahant Gopal that he would be away for a couple of months. The Mahant was surprised. Although most elderly sadhus who came to Vrindavan stayed put, and some even took vows never to leave, this quiet Babu was coming and going constantly. Because others come to Vrindavan to do their bhajan, to, you know, like this, develop their own, you know, spiritual culture. But Prabhupada was interested how to engage the world in that, so therefore he was coming and going. So this is very different than anybody else was doing. Abai preached actively in Kanpur, staying in various homes and canvassing for League members. As the guest of the Anandeshwar Satsang Mandal, he lectured regularly at the popular Paramat Bathing Ghat on the Ganga. He especially made acquaintances amongst industrialists and educators, often sitting and conversing with them for hours, and many were impressed by his dedication and his soft-spoken talks. But his collections were small. When he offered the wealthy magnates his constitutional membership, they usually opted in favor of the 2 rupees a year subscription membership. 2 rupees a year. The guy's an industrialist. 2 rupees, you know. What nonsense, these guys. He collected 2 rupees a year. Not even a month, right? A year. He collected a few letters of appreciation, but after 2 months, he left. After some months in Vrindavan, Abai decided to go back to Bombay and preach. In Bombay, he quickly broke off his association with the stifling Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan and moved out of the faculty residence there, staying a week at a time in the homes of various patrons. He tried to generate interest in his missionary activities. When a friend of Acharya Prabhakar arranged for Abai to address Sunday evening crowds at a Bombay beach, Abai accepted. Following already established custom, he sat on a cushion and the people gathered, from 500 to 1,000, sitting and listening, as he loudly spoke the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Abai spoke for several nights, and there were other lecture opportunities also. 1 week he spoke several times at a Bombay Vishnu temple. But Abaya wanted to do more than deliver occasional lectures to an uncommitted audience. The conviction was growing within him that he should preach outside India. The idea, of course, had been there for some time. He had expressed it in the prospectus for the League of Devotees, before gatherings at the Radha Memorial in Jhansi, during his meeting at the Birla Mandir in Delhi, and on many other occasions. Informally, he had expressed it hundreds of times to acquaintances, and he had woven his dream throughout his writings. He was ready to travel anywhere if he could fulfill Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's order to preach in English. In India, the English-speaking population was small, so Abai continued to dream of going to the West. If he could travel to Bombay, Delhi, and Kanpur, why not to London or New York, where millions spoke English and had never heard the message of Lord Chaitanya? So Srila Prabhupada was very, committed to get this done. So whatever it would take, whatever, he's not worried about, where he's going to stay, how he'll be taken care of. Because the point is, Krishna will take care. Krishna wants it'll happen. How he'll take care of that, you don't know. But Krishna is there. So he thought, if he could travel around here and there, why not to London or to, other places? Okay. All right, what do you think? Just like, you can travel from here, upstairs, over to where you play marbles, back to here, yell and scream down at the pump, come back here, so why not go around the world? No? Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Yeah.